Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're starting the show on the Ideas Network today by talking with you about the Mississippi River. With, well, Reggie McLeod, of course. He's the editor and publisher of Big River Magazine. So we have him on every few times a year, I guess, to talk about what's going on. Big River is the January-February issue is out. We'll talk about that issue and a whole lot more. Certainly look forward to talking with you as well. Call in. What's your favorite place to visit along Wisconsin's West Coast? Maybe you have some concerns about regulations in that area. Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Reggie McLeod with us by phone today. Reggie, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, good morning, Larry.
You know, maybe you could talk a little bit about Big River Magazine and what you write about for those who aren't familiar with it.
Sure. We cover about 400 miles of the Mississippi River from the Twin Cities to the Quad Cities, which includes the whole west coast of Wisconsin on the Mississippi River. And that stretch of Mississippi River kind of defines the Driftless area, which is an area mostly in Wisconsin, but it's also in northeastern Iowa and southeastern Minnesota and northwestern Illinois that has the steep bluffs, rocky bluffs, and a lot of trout streams and springs. And geologically, it's different from the whole upper Midwest. So we kind of talk about that a lot too. So the Wisconsin River, the lower Wisconsin River's in the Driftless area, and the lower part of the Chippewa River, and so on too.
Well, it's always a fun read for me, and I know it is for those who subscribe to it. And I should just mention BigRiverMagazine.com, probably the place to go if you want to take another look at the magazine itself and perhaps to subscribe to it. Well, you know, you had a lot of snow, I bet, the last couple of days, haven't you?
No, we haven't had much.
No?
We kind of lucked out, actually. It's just the dusting. We had a layer of ice that we all had to scrape off our cars yesterday morning, and it was kind of like steel. it was some of the toughest ice I've ever seen. In fact, finished scraping it this morning. I scraped enough to drive to work, and then I couldn't get it all. So, yeah. But we lucked out with the snow. How about Madison?
Oh, Madison got, and a good part of the state got a lot of snow. It just reminded, I was thinking about your magazine, and you have a number of small articles kind of in the front. Kind of interesting to for me to think about. How does he pick those stories, which ones to include? But there was one about salt in there, and its impact on the water. And, you know, when you got a lot of snow, the temptation is to put a lot of salt out, too.
Yeah, and that's really bad for the water. That's bad for the lakes and rivers and everything. And there are ways to remove ice more effectively and use less salt, and that's what that article was about. And, in fact, yesterday, you know, after we had quite a bit of ice on the sidewalks, I was looking out of my office window, and the guy across the street had a sprayer. He wasn't throwing, you know, chunks of salt out there. He was spraying salt water on the sidewalk. And that gets better coverage, and you use less salt. And I think more people are becoming conscious about that.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. Charlie in Milwaukee has something for us. Let's go to Charlie. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make the comment. As I lived in Memphis for 5 years, and they have a wonderful museum on the Mississippi River. I truly fell in love with the Mississippi after learning its impact on the United States historically, how it affects commerce, how it affects agricultural, and also how it affects the cultural aspect of the United States. The Mississippi is a treasure that we really don't understand or appreciate because it is so in-depth in our culture, and I would recommend anyone, if they get a chance, to visit the Mississippi Museum in Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh, Charlie, thanks a lot for calling. Have you visited that museum, Reggie?
No, I haven't, but I should. I've been wanting to get down to Memphis for a while, and I'll get down there and do that. There's also a very good museum in Dubuque. That it's a river, Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium. They have huge aquariums there. They have a lot of stuff about the shipping industry and towboats and history and a lot of live animals, turtles and fish and otters and so on. It's an amazing place. So I think Charlie would probably enjoy that if he ever gets over by Dubuque.
And you've written about that in the magazine.
Oh, yes, and I visited that one many times. It's hard to take in a day, actually. There's so much in there.
Interesting. Well, Judy in Ripon has something for us. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. We've enjoyed the Driftless area for so many years. Myself, since I was a child, since I was a baby, my parents had a cabin there. And we have one now there that we've had for over 20 years. And I can't think of a better word to describe southwestern Wisconsin, particularly the area between Prairie du Chien and La Crosse, other than magical, just magical. I mean, every season, it's one's more beautiful than the next. And so many people vacation in northern Wisconsin, which is beautiful too, but it doesn't even hold a candle to southwestern Wisconsin. So I would just, you know, if people are listening because it's a snowy day and they're thinking about where they want to go in the spring and the summer, I just can't recommend it enough. And I'm glad that you've got this wonderful publication. Oh. I'll take my comments off the air. Thanks.
Thank you, Judy. Appreciate it. Well, Reggie, I'm sure you're not going to argue too much with what Judy had to say there.
No, I definitely agree. And well, I like the whole 400 miles. But the that particular stretch is interesting because on the highway usually follows the river, Highway 61 or, you know, various highways. But on that stretch between La Crosse and Prairie du Chien, there are large parts of it, especially on the Iowa side, where there's no highway on the river. The bluffs come right, literally right down to the water. And they had to kind of dynamite enough space to put the railroad through there. And so it's really picturesque if you're out on the river, and it's really quiet. The biggest town on that stretch would be Lansing, and I think there are fewer than 1,000 people in Lansing. So you have this long stretch of the river, and there are very few towns or people living on it, and it's especially beautiful. It's a great area to paddle and boat and fish in.
Oh, absolutely. And those towns are a lot of fun to visit.
Yeah, all have different characters.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, it's really fun. I do that a lot. I still enjoy it. I still, when I'm doing articles in an area, I'll go down there and try to do something I haven't done before in a place that I haven't visited before. And after 26 years of working on this magazine, and I worked as a freelance journalist before that, writing these sorts of stories, there are still places I haven't been to and things I haven't done in that stretch. So it's really provided a lot of entertainment and education for me over the years.
Yeah. Well, let's take another call. By the way, you can join in too. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Questions or experiences to share, give a call or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Jeff in West Salem, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to know if Reggie remembers off of Blackhawk Park down by alongside the river down by Victory. There used to be a boat that was parked across the river like a large barge that was turned into a restaurant called Wendy's River Queen, I believe it was. You had to pull into the boat landing. You could go there by boat if you wanted. But you had to pull into the boat landing and go out and raise a flag, and they would come over and get you, and you could sit there and have drinks and dinner and bob up and down with the waves, and it was really quite a good memory.
Well, Jeff, thanks for calling. What about Wendy's River Queen?
I'm making a note of that. No, I've never heard of that. If Jeff is still on the line, I'm curious about when that was open.
Oh, it had to be in the 70s because I lived in Stoddard at the time, and we used to go down there occasionally camping at Blackhawk Park and fishing, and we'd go down to the boat landing while we were there and raise up the white flag like they do at the fishing barges, and they'd come over and get you, and you could sit there for, they had a limited menu, but usually little ribeye steaks and all the fixings, and it was just a real good time.
Yeah, that sounds excellent. I moved out to the area in 74, so I might have just missed it. I don't know if there's floating restaurants still. There used to be one up in the Twin Cities that was called the No Wake Cafe, and there was one down by Savannah, but I've never heard of this one. That sounds like a lot of fun. I'm sorry I missed it. We might find some information about it and do a story on it.
Yeah, you guys do history pieces in the Big River. I always find those interesting.
Yeah, the March-April issue, the next issue, is we kind of specialize in history. We slip them into all the issues now and then, but in that issue we usually do at least two or three history stories. But yeah, this sounds like a good story. I'm looking forward to learning more about that.
Yeah, Jeff, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. Well, we've got Scott in Winona, Minnesota. Hi, Scott.
Hi there, Larry. I am actually driving down 61 right now from Winona to my Wednesday volunteer gig at the Welcome Center where the interstate comes into Wisconsin from Minnesota. And I am calling to plug a publication, and we give it away free, called The Great River Road. And it covers all the things to do and see between Red Wing, Minnesota, down to Dubuque. And we talk up the Great River Road at almost every single shift. We're all volunteers, and we love what we do.
Scott, thank you so much. And Reggie, you familiar with that publication?
Oh yeah, certainly. There's the Great River Road follows the entire Mississippi River on both sides, and it's in all 10 states. And there's a lot of websites for it and information about the cities on the Great River Road in the different states. And it's a great organization, and it's a good reference.
Yep.
Traveling. Yeah.
Just along those lines, Jen in Burlington emailed to say, I've always wanted to explore the Mississippi, and now I'm inspired. Where should I start?
Right.
Driving the river road or paddling or camping? What should a beginner know?
Well, I wouldn't go paddling today. but yeah, just driving the Great River Road, pick a couple places you want to visit, and then just kind of take your time and pull off those little side roads and go down to the river. You have to be a little more careful in the winter, of course, but it's still a lot of fun. There's a lot going on in the different cities, and there are museums and concerts. And one event that you'll find in a lot of the river towns this time of year are Eagle Watches. So they'll have, sometimes they have special weekend celebrations where you can go there and watch some eagles on the river, and there'll be displays and maybe concerts and dinners and, you know, various things like that. Even the very small river towns often have eagle viewing celebrations, because the eagles, a lot of eagles stay up here because right below the locks and dams, the river stays open all winter because it's roiling and it doesn't freeze over. And a lot of the fish die. There's a fish called the gizzard shad, which lives on algae, and they're very sensitive to the cold. This is their northern limit. So a lot of them die in the winter, and then the eagles come
clean up on them.
Yeah. So there's a lot of eagles hanging out by the locks and dams and spillways this time of year. I've been to a place in Onalaska. I know one winter I counted over 100 eagles in a couple trees over a spillway. So it can be a lot of fun. It's a good winter activity.
So there you go, Jen. Hop in the car and get over there and do a drive. Stop in those towns, and you're going to really I think, love the experience. And I think it's really pretty, as someone else said, it's really pretty at all four seasons of the year. And certainly winter is a great time to visit as well. But as Reggie said, be a little careful there with your driving. That's all you need to do. Well, I tell you what, Reggie McLeod, our guest today, he is the editor of Big River Magazine. It's explores the Mississippi River and the heart of the Driftless area. Join in with your questions or comments or maybe your experiences at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Cheryl Gasser, our on-air producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at the Mississippi River and the Driftless area today with our guest, Reggie McLeod, editor and publisher of Big River Magazine. You can find out some more about it at bigrivermagazine.com. Callers online, let's take another call. Phil in Oconomowoc's been waiting a bit. Hi, Phil. Thank you for calling.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. Reggie, I like your magazine. Been a subscriber for about a year. I grew up outside of Galena on the Mississippi River my whole life. We have a cabin there now still. And my observations have been that there's been a lot of extra incidents of high water or flooding. So, for instance, last year we had probably four or five different times where the river level went above the 17-foot flood stage at Dubuque. And it just seems to me that over the last, 5 to 7 years, the increase in what you would call 100-year floods has been more like, 2-year floods. And based on your experience, I'm just wondering what your what your view on history is and what the outlook is.
Well, the tough thing for me, and I think with you and a lot of people who enjoy the river, is that this is probably the new normal. And I know I was so frustrated last summer because I like to paddle on the river, and I don't go to a lot of places when it's beyond a certain level because it's dangerous. The current is high and there's a lot of there are actually trees floating down the river, and you don't want to run into one of those. And it was too high to paddle in most of the summer. There are backwaters that I can go in and paddle, and that's kind of a workaround. But I think we have to see this as the new normal. And back, oh, gosh, when I first moved to this area in the mid-70s, I worked for the Soil Conservation Service and for about a year, and we used all these tables to calculate projects we were working on that talked about the 100-year flood and the 500-year flood and those sorts of things. Well, they're rewriting those tables every few years now because they used the same tables for decades, and they are so wrong now that basically, and this is it's hard to understand the impact of this, but pretty much the entire infrastructure in this country is out of spec now because the specs have changed, and the 500-year flood and 100-year flood and all that has changed, and it's probably going to change in the future because with global climate change, we've had record rainfall year after year and record temperatures, average temperatures, and so on, many years. And when people were warning us about this, they didn't say it's just going to get hotter. They said that the climate is going to be unstable. And it could be, they don't know, it could be unstable for a few hundred years. I mean, people don't really appreciate the scale of this. You can really see it on the Mississippi River. You can really see it on the floods that Madison had this last year.
For sure.
And the floods that were in other, I feel bad about a lot of little towns in Wisconsin on the Kickapoo River and so on. People were flooded out of their homes. A lot of them are not going to move back to those towns, and it's really causing a lot of economic damage. And as difficult as it is, I think we just have to see this as a new normal and expect this. I think a lot of people with boats are going to buy bigger motors because it's dangerous out there. If you don't have enough power and you want to get out there and do things, You have to have a bigger motor because you might have to get out of the way of a tree. You might have to travel upstream with some real heavy current. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better, and it may be changing radically. It could swing back and forth, actually. We could have droughts. People don't really know because this has never happened before. So not to be a bummer or anything, but I think that's the way it is. I just see more and more evidence every year of that.
You know, just thanks, Phil, for calling. Just to kind of go along with what Phil was talking about, Eric and Toma had emailed in to just ask you, what is your opinion of the overall environmental health of the river?
I should do a 3-day. A lot of it's gotten better. I mean, I don't want to be just negative. The eagles are back, the pelicans are back, a lot of birds are back, and a lot of sewage discharge has been cleaned up. The cities are doing a lot better job, and so on. However, the extra rain has meant that the river is silting in faster. A lot of the backwaters are filling in faster. Lake Pepin is filling in faster. And they have a hard time keeping it open for shipping now because it's shoaling and filling in places where it didn't before. They have to get out there and look, because towboats will get stuck in places where normally it wouldn't be a problem. So that's getting worse. The agricultural pollution has gotten much worse, and that's affected groundwater, and that's affected the river. And I'm not trashing farmers by saying that. There's a lot of good farmers who are doing a better job and being conscientious. But overall, about 70, 80, or even I was just reading an article that said in Iowa, agricultural pollution is responsible for as much as 90% of the phosphorus and nitrogen that's going into the Iowa rivers. That causes the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, these things have an effect on the ocean. So that's a problem. That can be resolved. There are really no laws regulating that now in this country. Everything else is regulated. Business, manufacturing, cities, they have regulations they have to follow. If you're farming, you don't have that. Those sorts of constraints, and I think that's probably going to change.
Well, I tell you what.
Happy questions.
Yeah, all these happy questions. Well, let's go to Claudette in Cedarburg and see what's on Claudette's mind. Hi.
Hi, good morning, all. I have two things. If you're driving and going up the river road, one should definitely stop at the Minnesota Maritime Art Museum in Winona. They have an absolutely fabulous collection of art that you would not expect to see. Van Gogh, Picasso, Renoir, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing that we have done, which is a nice little quick trip, is take the Amtrak out of Milwaukee to Red Wing. It leaves Milwaukee about 2 o'clock, 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You get into Red Wing about 9 o'clock at night and then walk across the street to the St. James Hotel, which is a delightful old hotel, then spend a day wandering around Red Wing, and then get, that's hard to say, then get back on the train in the early morning, and you're back in Milwaukee around 2 o'clock in the afternoon the next day. It's just a delightful trip.
Boy, that sounds like fun, doesn't it, Reggie?
Oh, gosh, that's an excellent idea. And the Amtrak from La Crosse up to the Twin Cities follows the river, and I was on it one time, heading towards Milwaukee, and there was a bald eagle right outside of my window, keeping right up with the train. It was so amazing. I was watching him, and he was watching me. And you get closer to the river on the railroad than you do on the highway. The highway's up and farther away from the river. The railroad is much closer, and it's more scenic than the highway even.
That's great. Claudette, thanks for bringing that up. I appreciate it very much. There may be some more people taking a look at that. That sounds like a lot of fun. And just in like 2 days, you're have a great trip and stay in a nice little hotel and go back to Milwaukee. Why not?
And the train goes right through the middle of all these little towns, Winona, La Crescent, Wabasha, Lake City. And you can really walk from the train station to the downtown of most of these towns along the Minnesota side here. I can walk there from my house to the Amtrak station, and I have. That's pretty cool.
That is very cool. Well, we have Bill in Oostburg up next. Hi, Bill.
Good morning. Good morning, Larry. Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. Wonderful program, as usual. Here's the topic. A number of my sportsman's friends, especially fishermen, reports that the railroad along the river has posted private and no trespassing signs. They're quite disappointed that they can only cross at certain locations. Would your guest comment on that, please?
Yeah, that's really an interesting struggle. And a lot of people resent that. In fact, the railroad cuts through some land that really belongs to the upper Mississippi River Fish and Wildlife and Fish Refuge. So if you're hunting or you want to go out to your favorite fishing spot, you're trespassing. But actually, you were probably always trespassing. And I will admit to being a trespasser myself in public here. But it's dicey, and the railroad has a right to enforce that. The states could actually probably pass laws to make it okay to cross at places where people have traditionally crossed. And I'm not an attorney, but I think they could do things to allow that. As I mentioned, the tracks go right through towns, and people cross all the time. There are fences at some places to prevent you, but most of it isn't fenced, and there are scary signs at places, but a lot of people ignore them. And what can I say? They have in the last few years, it's Burlington Northern on one side and Canadian Pacific on the other, on the Minnesota side. And they have had detectives out there writing tickets and, you know, scolding people and watching cars. If they see a car parked by the road and there's nothing there except the woods and the railroad track, they know that if they watch that car for a little while, someone's going to trespass to get back to their car. So that's been kind of an interesting thing. But some, you know, a serious note about that is people who do rescues on the river are especially concerned about that, because if someone falls through the ice, for instance, this time of year, and they want to get out there and rescue them, legally they're constrained from taking the shortest route across a railroad track. You know, so there are some kind of serious issues that come up with that too. And we've been following it, but it's still, I think there needs to be some work done on that by the state legislatures, maybe working with the railroads.
There we go. Bill, thank you very much for bringing that up. Let's go to Bob in French Island. Bob, hello.
Hi there, Larry and Reggie. I've been a subscriber to Big River Magazine for Lord knows how many years, and I've always enjoyed it and recommend it to everybody. In fact, I even buy subscriptions for other people. And then I recycle mine among friends, too. But since you're talking a little bit about slightly questionable activity from a legal standpoint, I really recommend cross-country skiing with your dogs out in the backwaters. I live here on French Island, and I'm on the west side, so I'm looking directly across at the Minnesota Bluffs on Lake Onalaska here. And can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's a good way to get exercise for the dogs. Now, technically, I think if you're not training them for hunting, they have to be on a leash. And so when I take the Chihuahua out, it's a little questionable. No, I have two, frankly, of mongrels. But it's just fantastic out there. We finally got, you know, some 4 inches of snow. But like Reggie up in Winona yesterday and so forth, we got hardly anything. But I was out yesterday for about 3 hours, and it was finally some fantastic skiing.
So good for Bob's good exercise for him, and good for his dogs as well, Reggie.
It is good, but it's good to go out with a buddy, because especially if you're not familiar, you can be in the backwaters with a lot of good ice and good snow, and there might be a spring or some weird current underneath. And people I know that have skied on the river all their lives still fall in from time to time. And it's good to have some safety gear handy and to be tuned into that. I had a friend who skied on the river his whole life, grew up in Winona here, and he went out skiing by himself, and he died.
Oh.
He didn't come back at night, and I went out and found him. So, but if you're with one or two other people and you're not skiing right next to each other, you're going to be fine. And a lot of those backwaters are only a foot or two deep. But also, this year was peculiar because the ice was so clear, and it still is in many places, that the ice skaters have been going nuts on the backwaters and places like Lake Onalaska, the big open spaces, and they had ice boat races up on Lake Pepin for 3 weekends in a row this month, and they were coming from all over the country. The ice was so good and clean, and those guys go more than 70 miles an hour.
Yeah, they really go fast. They're fun to watch.
That happens very rarely, that we don't have a crust of snow everywhere on the ice by this time of year. So,
yeah. Bob, thanks again for calling. Yeah. Reggie, you're going to be speaking at Canucopia. We'll be talking about that, I'm sure, as time goes on. But we'll have folks from Canucopia to visit. It's March 9th and 10th, and you'll be talking about paddling the upper Mississippi.
Yeah. I've been doing that for many years, actually, and I'll be speaking on Saturday, early Saturday and early Sunday afternoon there. It'll be the same talk, but we always get a lot of interest, and a lot of people go up north and they go to New Zealand and stuff to paddle, but really paddling in the backwaters is incredible, and some people paddle the whole length. I mean, they get out there in the main channel and paddle, but it's a lot of fun, and even when the water's high, there are backwaters you can go into that really don't have any current that's hard to deal with, and actually you can get into places you couldn't normally get into when the water's a little bit high. So, yeah, I'll be there talking about that both days.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And I wanted to also mention you're going to be publishing an anthology of bird stories from the magazines, and that's going to be out in, a month or so?
Yes, you know, we write about everything from history to the environment to critters, but the critter that we've written about the most are birds, because I think people are fascinated by birds, and this is the biggest flyway in the United States is the Mississippi River. In the fall and spring, we have, you know, millions of birds of every sort flying in the river valley. So we have a lot of good bird stories, and we decided to start doing some anthologies of stories that have appeared in Big River, and the birds were the subject of the first one. We thought that's a natural way to start out, because we've got some great stories about peculiar birds or even birds that make lures and fish and pelicans and all kinds of interesting things in there.
That's got to be a lot of fun, and so people can just go to BigRiverMagazine.com probably to get that anthology, and also to subscribe to the magazine.
Yeah, we don't have any information on the website yet, but in about a month we'll be putting information on the website, and we'll be putting it in the magazine. And also we have a 800 number, 1-800-303-8201, if they want to call to subscribe or if they have questions or something.
I was just, Jim in Lansing sent an email just to mention a couple of attractions. One is Horse Falls, where even tour buses come to Lansing to visit this jam-packed, overly stacked variety store. And the other is the recently completed Driftless Area Education and Visitor Center. Great place to learn about history.
Yeah, they're both worth the trip, and you can see both of them in one day. That hardware store has, like, three different models of just about anything you can imagine. it's overwhelming. What can I say? So I got in there and tried to stump the guy, and I said, oh, do you have this? And he'll show me a corner, and he'll have like three or four different models of whatever I come up with. So it's pretty interesting. And that Driftless Center Information Center is beautiful. It's overlooking the Mississippi River. They have a lot of excellent displays. It's just gorgeous. It's really a great place to spend some time.
Well, I wanted, you know, at the beginning of the show, I mentioned the story that I found so fascinating is China's sort of the history of China being involved in the Big River area.
Yeah, that's I love that story. It was I'm really glad that that Emory came up with the idea for it. Yeah, Xi Jinping, who's now the leader of China, he's the head of the party and the president and everything. When he was a student, he spent some time in Muscatine, and they showed great hospitality, and it made a big impression on him. And he came back a few years ago, and they're building all these bridges and having students travel back and forth, and it's just really amazing. They've made a really strong connection with China, and it's been, I think, a benefit to the China and as well as Muscatine both. And there's a Chinese Friendship Center there, and it's really interesting. This is just getting off the ground. I think there's a big new hotel that overlooks a river in downtown Muscatine, and I think this is just starting. It'll be really interesting to watch.
Well, it was a fascinating story, and I thought worth the price of the magazine just that particular story, as far as I was concerned. I really, really enjoyed reading that little history and how it came to be what it is today. It was a lot of fun. Reggie, you know, it's always a pleasure. I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks. I always love talking about the river and the Driftless area. I had a good time. Thanks, Larry.
Reggie McLeod, editor and publisher of Big River Magazine. And you take a little look at it. Go to bigrivermagazine.com. He's going to be at Canucopia March 9th and 10th to talk about paddling the upper Mississippi. So there's a lot for you there. And you can do a little hiking along in that Driftless area as well. There's some great places to hike. And as a matter of fact, it's hiking is becoming very popular, as a matter of fact. That's why we are going to talk about it next here on the Ideas Network. You stay with us.